over to Luke. Luke chapter 8. And this is a continuation of the story that we started last week in Luke, where Jesus has initiated this desire to get away. It was after he had had a meeting with his family, no less, which we wonder why that would exhaust anybody. But he said, let's go to the other side of the lake, and they went. And that story that we just kind of looked at in that hymn, he was so tired, he was going to sleep through the whole storm. They woke him up, and he was, in this film, he was still so tired, he went back to sleep afterwards, which I think is fitting for what's going on here. And then he gets to the other shore, and they, you know, find a place to land, and then the unusual, crazy naked guy comes out and makes life fun, and then there's the 2,000 pigs that go down the hill into the water, and the folks that were afraid. And so we talked about applications of that last week, that we can understand that Jesus understands some things about us and family relations and fatigue and you know, things not going well and how he handles that. But Jesus was tenderly calling to this guy, and he healed him, even though it meant 2,000 pigs losing their, well, yeah. Any rate, they were still buoyant, I'm sure. But the people were afraid and asked him to leave. So his vacation, his desire to get away, kind of was, it didn't go as planned. So we pick up the story when he gets back. It says here in verse 40, he says, now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were expecting him. Just then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. Wow. I don't know about you. When I get home from vacation, I don't feel like I'm home until I've unpacked, you know, and get everything put away, and then you can kind of, well, Jesus gets back on his side of the lake, and he's met by a crowd, and Jesus is used to crowds. But it turns out this crowd is a very crushing crowd. We're going to read more about it, but out of the midst of that, Jairus comes, and Jairus is the leader of the synagogue in Capernaum. Now, remember the emphasis we've had on enemies in Luke? As Luke is trying to explain to Theophilus who these people are that have Paul in prison in Rome awaiting trial, and he has talked a lot about the Pharisees. Well, one of the people that they have influence over are the rulers of the synagogue. Now, we don't think in terms of rulers. Who rules our church? Yeah, no, don't look at me. You guys know better than that. We are congregational. That is oh so not true, okay? And that is, if you've never been in a congregational church before, we have ways of making decisions as a group, okay? Until things go wrong, and then people point at me. Well, this person is not a minister. This is a person who is held up in high esteem, who makes sure everything runs the way that they think it should run. And again, the synagogues, you're not going to find them in the Old Testament. That developed during the intertestamental period. There are no teachings about the synagogues. There are no commands about the synagogues. There are no instructions about the synagogues, right? But they are very highly ordered by this time. And this was a position of authority and prestige. And usually these are the people that don't know how to feel about Jesus. We haven't heard about Jesus teaching at the synagogue in Capernaum for a long time. Chances are they don't accept Jesus as a rabbi anymore because of the religious leaders from Jerusalem. So that may or may not be true, but just think in terms of what Luke has been telling us. This man probably has not been in contact with Jesus. Matter of fact, he probably is working against Jesus in his ministry. Does that make him an enemy? Well, in his mind, yeah. Well, what has Jesus taught us about how we're supposed to deal with enemies? love them. Do good. Jesus does not hesitate. Yeah, I'll come with you, Jairus. I haven't unpacked yet. I haven't got over the whole trip and the whole thing, but yeah. I will come. It sounds like you really need me to be there. So Jesus takes off. He says, as Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. Why? Because this is Jesus. This is the guy that can do miracles. This is the guy that everybody comes to when they need something. And he's been gone and he's back, and now they just kind of... We haven't been in crowds for a while, have we? Have you ever felt like you're going to be crushed in a crowd? There are people who literally get crushed in crowds. It's a scary feeling. It's a very claustrophobic feeling. And Jesus is on his way somewhere. He's trying to get to Jairus' house. It says here, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. Okay, so this is a woman, and it's interesting to see what some gospel writers include and some leave out. And we know that Luke had access to the book of Mark, okay, because he quotes Mark verbatim. But he leaves out a statement where Mark says, this woman had spent all her money on doctors, and instead of getting better, she got worse. I wonder why Luke left that one out. You remember Luke's profession? He worked for an insurance company. No. He was a doctor. Okay. He just left that whole thing out. Okay. Maybe he was, you know, saving a little bit of ink right there. But this woman had been bleeding continually. Now, let's talk about this in a way that it may, you know, it's in the Jewish mindset. Somebody bleeding has to be very, very careful because of blood-borne illnesses. And in the law of Moses, there are a lot of things about what has to happen when somebody is bleeding. And what happens if you touch somebody who's bleeding? Remember the whole story about the red tents? Right? In the Old Testament, when women were going through that cycle, they would have to separate themselves from everybody else. Right? If you touch somebody who's bleeding, if you touch somebody who has an issue of blood, that makes you technically unclean. And you have to go through some time of being separated from everybody else in order to make sure that you haven't caught something. And where does that leave Jesus? Wow. Well, first off, let's talk about this woman. How long has it been since this woman's been around other people? Yeah. Unless they didn't know. Right? But where is she now? She's in a crowd that is socially distanced. No. That is crushing each other. Right? But she decides to go through this crowd and touch Jesus. Now, it says here, in verse 45, Jesus asked a question, who touched me? Jesus asking, when they all denied it, Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you. But Jesus said, someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me. Wow, so Jesus stops. Have you ever been in a crowd that was moving and then you try to stop? Yeah. Everybody feels really good about that person stopping, don't they? It's like that, you know, person on the highway that decides that they're going to do 45. And you got to, okay, and go around them? So it's one of those weird dynamics and people moving, and he stops and he says, "Hey, you touched me." And they look at Jesus like, "I think you need more sleep. Are you okay? Who touched you? Look at this place. People are," and everybody's denying it. "Not me. Not me.
Not me. Not me."
But Jesus is not moving. And he's the reason for the crowd, right? So the crowd finally has to come to a halt. And a woman who can't get out of the middle of that crowd has to fess up. How long did that take? Don't know. Really don't know. How awkward was it? It was very, very awkward. Did everybody understand what was going on? No. Peter did. He's just wondering about Jesus. "Are you okay? Everybody's touching you." And so, it says here, verse 47, "Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. And Jesus said, 'Way to go. Now I have to go and spend some time away from everybody else.'" No, that's not what he said. "Then he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. It's okay. It's okay.' But now it's really awkward. Everybody's wondering, 'Did that woman touch me? Was she standing by me?' Yeah. How awkward was it for her to leave? This is a really awkward situation. But here's what Jesus does. When he realizes how awkward it is, he lets her know, "It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Your faith is sealed. You got go in peace. Go. Wait, you and I, we're all right. I'm not mad at you. I'm not upset with you. I'm not demanding things from you. We're okay." Now, where does that leave Jesus as far as helping Jairus' daughter? Well, I'm sure that there was a nice debate about that. I'm sure that they could debate this for hours and days and weeks on end. But Jesus is going to go help Jairus' daughter. He's going. So here's what happens. He says, when he arrived at the house, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, we skipped a spot. In verse 49, while Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the teacher anymore." Wow. It's nice to have somebody break news to you gently, isn't it? But I'm sure Jairus and all his friends are wondering whether he should go and talk to Jesus, because they're not sure about Jesus, and they've talked said some things about Jesus, or, and they don't feel good about Jesus. But Jairus needs to talk to Jesus, and now he's putting his reputation and his prestige on the line, and someone has said, "Hey, listen, don't do it anymore. It's over. Your daughter's dead. Don't have this man come to your house." Wow. Especially in his current condition. where he has just touched somebody who's unclean, or somebody who's unclean touched him. He said, hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, don't be afraid, just believe and she will be healed. Remember the last chapter we talked about all the people who were afraid, how the disciples were afraid of the storm, and then when Jesus calmed the storm, they were afraid of Jesus. And the people who were afraid of, you know, Legion, the fun neighbor to have, and then after Jesus healed him, and then they were afraid of Jesus. A lot of fear going on, right? And Jesus said, don't don't be afraid. Hang in there. Trust me. She's going to be okay. How can she be okay? She's dead. They've pronounced her dead. Okay. When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. Stop wailing, Jesus said. She's not dead, but asleep. Okay. All the people, the whole crowd that was with Jesus, the ones that couldn't go in, they're all wailing. I mean, and this is something that they did. Matter of fact, in Jewish customs, they had professional wailers. They had people that were hired because they were good at wailing. Right? These are not people that we saw pictures of in that video that went out in boats with harpoons. Wailers. This is a different kind of wailing. This is the people who are, you know, just mourning and lamenting, and that's supposed to help you lament, and it also has to do something with evil spirits, okay? And I know that we're going to, that is not in our wheelhouse, but this is a culture that believed in evil spirits, and they believed in evil spirits being able to possess bodies. I know that's strange, and I had to live in Africa for a while to see how strange that really is, but it is a reality, okay? So they had professional wailers, and they were wailing, and they were making all this noise, and this girl is dead, and Jesus said, no, she's not dead. She's asleep. I titled this sermon, Jesus Walks a Fine Line, because is this girl dead or is she asleep? Is being asleep another euphemism for being dead? Yeah, the Bible talks about that. Paul talks about those who've fallen asleep in Jesus, those who died, right? Well, what's going on here? Jesus already decided what he's going to do. He's going to bring this woman back to life, this 12-year-old. Now, how is that going to look to the crowd? Is there a difference between Jesus going and waking her up or Jesus bringing her back from the dead and Jesus' current state of being unclean? How would this reflect on this poor 12-year-old girl? And I want you to know here that Jesus has in mind this girl's well-being. He's probably met this girl back when he was allowed to go to the synagogue in Capernaum. And this woman's life, the rest of her life, who she's going to marry, how she's going to be held in society's eyes, all of this is going to hinge on what Jesus does now. So Jesus tells the crowd, no, she's not dead, she's asleep. And the strange thing happens. In verse 53, they laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. Yeah, have you ever seen somebody go from wailing and mourning to laughing? Talk about scary. I mean, This is the kind of guy, like, you know, the guy on the other side of the lake, scary. Like, oh, whew, that's kind of weird. You know, but if they're professionals and they don't really feel it, you know, maybe that's understandable or not. But they knew he was wrong. She's dead. But he didn't do it in front of everybody. He just took a couple people with him, James, John, Peter, Mom and Dad, Jairus, and we don't know the wife's name. And it says here, but he took her by the hand and said, my child, get up. Her spirit returned. Was she dead? You know what death means, literally, the word death? It means separation. When your body, your soul, your spirit are separated. The spirit returned, is the way Luke said. And she wasn't separated anymore. He says, he took her by the hand, he said, my child, get up. And her spirit returned, and at once she stood up, and Jesus told them to give her something to eat. What is that about? Well, one of the beliefs in the system of, how much do you know about zombies? Oh, come on. Some of you guys watch those shows. The zombie lore. What do zombies eat? Brains, right? It's amazing the way that we have this lore in this kind of idea about what vampires do and what zombies do and all that. What does this culture think in terms of somebody who has been taken over by an evil spirit? One thing they said, they don't eat. And this shows up a couple times in your text. Jesus, after his resurrection, he is going to go out of his way to eat with the disciples. He says, yeah, can I have some fish? Fix me some fish. He said, give her something to eat. She is not possessed by an evil spirit. She is now a whole person. And it says here, her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened. How does that work out for Jesus? That doesn't normally work out very well, okay? But why would he tell somebody not to? Let's go tell everybody. Jesus has just won over the synagogue leader. He has taken somebody who was an enemy and raised her daughter from the dead. Why don't we tell everybody that? That would not be good for Jairus' daughter. Who was Jesus concerned about in this whole story? That 12-year-old girl. Yeah. Who's he concerned about this morning? Yeah, don't look at the person next to you. He's concerned about them. He's concerned about you. And all the things that he's done in your life, did he do them for flash, for show? No, he did them for, you. You're the reason. You're the reason he did them. It wasn't for publicity. It wasn't for notches in the Bible. You guys probably didn't understand that terminology. Remember the old notches in the gun? You talk about how many people have come to Jesus and people notched their Bibles. No. No. It's about you. It's about you. And if nobody ever knows, it's because you haven't told them, and that's okay. Maybe you don't even know all the things Jesus has done for you. Maybe you're still learning. I'm learning. 62, I'm learning all the things that Jesus has done for me and does for me all the time. And I pray that I my mind can be open and my spirit can be open so I can learn more. And so what we do here on Sunday means that much more. Because it's about me. That's what I'm celebrating. And yeah, it's about you. And it's about everybody. But it's about me. Don't get left out of this picture. Don't you wish you knew what happened with Jairus' daughter? Do you think she was a believer? Yeah. Yeah, me too. I don't know. Do you think Jairus changed his mind about Jesus? Do you think he got to be the synagogue leader next year? Probably not. Yeah. But he doesn't consider Jesus an enemy anymore. And Jesus never treated him like an enemy. Go in peace. Go in peace. And today we're going to come. We're going to take the Lord's Supper together. We don't come down anymore because we have the little sanitary cups and we're still doing that. But we remember. We remember what Jesus has done for me. To prepare our minds for the communion, we have another video to watch.